This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
Hello and welcome to The Rest Is Money with me, Steph McGovern.
And with me, Robert Peston. What have you been up to, Steph?
I have just come back from Ireland, where I've been there visiting family.
St. Patrick's Day?
Of course there was Irish dancing. I have to Irish dance on St. Patrick's Day. It's literally like set into my rules of life, is every year I've got to have a couple of gins and then knock out a reel. And that's exactly what I did in St. Pat's, but I did it with my little girl, which was fun. Is she learning? Yeah, well, not in any formal way, because I don't want her to end up in that competitive landscape of Irish dancing that I was in, but she loves it. She loves a bit of a jig.
What's wrong with the competitive element to it?
Have you not heard about all the drama in the Irish dancing world? There's been a whole documentary made about it. It's just mega political and competitive. Anyway, we're not talking about that today.
I don't know.
Have a look at that documentary. I'll find out what it's called for you. And what about you? You've been getting the mick taken out of you, which is no shock.
Yeah, we had Fergal Sharkey on the show and he very generously gave me advice because, as you may remember, I've got this band called Centrist Dad.
And we did do, at
our one and only live gig in North London, we did do a cover of Teenage Kicks. And actually, extraordinarily, Fergal heard us, because he lives up the road from where we were doing the gig, and he actually heard us playing, and he put something out on Twitter on the day, or X on the day. Actually, he was very generous. He's a very generous man. He said bravo or something. He was sure he could hear, you know, my dulcet tones. Actually, he probably didn't say bravo, because, you know, but nonetheless, I'm paraphrasing for you. Anyway, he didn't say chapeau. Anyway, he basically is encouraging me to body surf for our next gig.
I can't wait. I just hope everyone holds
but
you
I
up.
I am in a state of shock today. I can be completely honest with you, because the worst thing that can possibly happen to a man of my age happened, which is some teenager in the house has nicked my shaving foam. So, starting the day not being able to hunt down the shaving foam, there's literally nothing worse.
And so is this you kind of stubbly then?
No, it's not. I had to shave with soap, which is the ultimate indignity.
Wait, the things you find out on this podcast. What else you'll be finding out is we're going to be talking about TikTok, because their future in the US has kind of been plunged into doubt this week, hasn't it? So we'll tell you about what's going on there, what it might mean. We're also talking about Nationwide's bid to buy Virgin Money, which is interesting.
Do you remember, because you and I, we'll come back to this, but you remember when you and I were working together at the BBC back in the financial crisis, all the talk was about, you know, increasing competition, the creation of so-called challenger banks. Yeah. Virgin was supposed to be the big new competitor on the block. Sold out. So there's so much to talk about there.
There is. Should we start with TikTok, though? Let me tell you what's going on there. So basically, obviously, in America, TikTok has been pretty controversial in terms of, like, the FBI and the US intelligence agencies are worried about, you know, China getting hold of personal data from its users, but also the fact that, you know, there's the app's algorithms potentially spreading disinformation, meddling in US elections. And so the concern is that TikTok, being Chinese owned in America is dangerous. So there was a vote, wasn't there? The bill was approved in the US House of Representatives, a bill which would force TikTok to be sold to a non-Chinese company within 6 months or be banned from US app stores. So it's gone through the first bit. There's still other hurdles to get through. It would have to be go through the Senate and also then signed off by Joe Biden, although he has said he probably would sign it off. But this is a big deal. And obviously the China, it isn't owned by the Chinese government, but it's owned by a Chinese company called ByteDance. But, you know, this has caused chaos, hasn't it? Because obviously the Chinese are raging about it, but the Americans are adamant that they're not going to let it continue in its current form there.
It's so messy and there's so much to talk about. I mean, I would just at this stage also point out that this is more complicated than just fears about American security and about the potential role of the Chinese government in gathering information about Americans. One of the things that came up in the debates among US politicians in the House of Representatives is we've got these appalling events in Israel and Gaza, tragic events. And one of the things that US representatives said they were concerned about was how the number of people viewing pro-Palestinian videos on TikTok was a multiple of the number of people seeing pro-Israeli videos on TikTok, right? And many people might say, well, that just reflects the interest of American people desperately worried about what's going on in Gaza, but there are other people who just say these are algorithms distorting what people can see. And obviously among members of Congress, there are concerns that, TikTok is promoting anti-Israeli feelings. So there is big politics around this that is different from just Chinese ownership.
Yeah, so essentially there are a lot of people, aren't there, who use TikTok as their sole source of news. So it means that, undue prominence, as you say, can be given to particular sides, and that's really dangerous in every sense. So this is what they want to stop from happening.
It's not obvious necessarily, and I think this is something that, nobody's really proved, that the algorithms are in some sense less reflective of people's views in the wider community than Instagram's, for example. What you've got to be careful of in these debates is not turning against a particular social media site because its apparent weighting of certain videos don't reflect your own views. One of the things that's quite interesting, for example, is that Trump, who used to be, when he was president, pretty anti-TikTok and was talking at the, back then when he was president, of stopping Chinese control of TikTok, it never happened. He has changed his position, right? He has changed his position and he's now saying, actually, because he doesn't like Meta, because he thinks Meta discriminates against him personally, he's now become a bit of a TikTok fan. So, in a sense, that kind of politics enters judgments. You've got to be very careful about deciding what the right thing to do is.
That part of that reason, though, is because also TikTok or ByteDance, whoever, went to Trump and told him that he's more popular on TikTok than Biden is. So there's like...
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's related to that.
It's interesting, though, kind of, if it does get banned in the US, what impact it would have globally on the business? Because if you look at how many people use it in America, it's something like 170 million. And so, yes, okay, if none of their users could use it anymore, that's a problem. But also, it's all the US influencers who we, for example, in the UK watch or whoever else around the world, if they then stop using it and start using other platforms, it becomes less relevant globally. So it's not just about people in America not being able to use it. It's about all the people around the world thinking it's less relevant because they're not hearing from the American stars that they're used to hearing from in all of this. So it's much bigger than you might think.
And just going back to Trump for a second, there is a Republican billionaire called Jeff Yass, and he controls a trading group called Susquehanna International Group, and he has a $15 billion stake in ByteDance. Right? Which is the owner of TikTok. He is a great Trump supporter. And it is also quite interesting in the context of both Republican politics, because there are loads of Republicans who say, you know, there's a security issue because of Chinese ownership. Yass is a big Republican supporter. And as I say, he actually owns $15 billion worth of this stuff. And many people think that one of the reasons Trump has suddenly said he's not sure TikTok should be sold is because he's influenced by his pal, Jeff Yass.
Shock horror there. Coming to the money point of view, you mentioned there about his stake in it. Obviously, it's a private company, ByteDance, so we don't know exactly, but it's believed to be valued at about $260 billion. And TikTok is its biggest business. So this is going to be an expensive purchase, isn't it? If ByteDance are forced to sell off TikTok, it's not going to be cheap. So looking at who might potentially buy it is interesting in all of this. Like the former Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, said he's putting a consortium together to buy the app. But there's also talk of Microsoft. They looked at it, didn't they, a few years ago. Who do you think might buy it if it does end up being forced to be sold?
I mean, one of the interesting questions is whether in the end the Chinese government will actually allow it to be sold. I mean, the Chinese government's absolutely furious with what's going on here. ByteDance, obviously, absolutely furious. One of the things that's happened, I don't know if you're aware of this, is they ran a campaign. They pushed out messages to American users of TikTok, told them to contact their local representatives. Congressmen were absolutely bombarded with telephone calls from angry American TikTok users saying, why are you depriving me of access to this, what they think is this incredibly valuable service that, you know, gives them meaning in their lives. I have to say, I think there is a risk, actually, that it won't end up being sold. That in the end, because you know, China is really angry about this, and I don't think they do want it passed on to anybody else. So I think it is simply possible that we could end up with TikTok simply being removed from the infrastructure in America. And guess who would love that? Meta would love that. Google would love that, because this has been, you know, a big competitor to these enormously powerful firms. So again, we need to think through the market implications of all of this. People may say, you know, big bad China, but actually they have introduced competition, you know, into what many would say is a not competitive enough market.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting that's going on with TikTok at the minute is the music side of things, because, you know, TikTok has, you know, been one of the biggest drivers of music consumption. I know you'll love Beyonce's song Texas Hold'em, but that went to the top of the charts, helped by its prominence on TikTok, because, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have been posting videos using that as their backdrop music. I, in fact, posted a video the other day actually using that, I've realised. So, yeah, so TikTok is this big driver of music, but it's currently in this kind of deadlock over whether it's allowed to use music which has been made by Universal, owned by Universal, or even has a connection to the artist. So, for example, Beyonce's song Texas Hold'em was co-written by someone who's signed to Universal. Universal has been slowly muting the videos that have got Universal Music on, but it might come to a point where loads of music ends up not being able to be used on TikTok unless they get this deal, because TikTok basically want 20% of the ad revenues with their music on, and they want the royalty money to be shared with fans who use AI to make their own tracks and not just musicians. So there's this whole big fight going on with Universal. They haven't sorted it out yet, but what you will see at the moment is some people's videos starting to be muted because of it. And that is really interesting how that's going to all end for TikTok as well.
And, you know, there are so many ramifications of this. So one of the questions is, you know, there are lots of particularly Tory MPs who are deeply concerned about the security implications in the UK of TikTok's presence here. And, you know, we did see a number of months ago the government announcing that you could not have the TikTok app on any government device. But we also know that quite a lot of politicians still put out videos on TikTok because they think it is such an important channel for reaching British people. For me, and I don't know what you think about this, the issue is less at the moment about security, although I do think this issue about, you know, we don't really know how much really important surveillance data is effectively available to the Chinese government through TikTok. We just don't know the answer to that. And I think we should be concerned about that. So I don't think the issues raised about security are trivial. But for me, the capitalist argument is probably the most important argument, right? Which is there is not a level playing field between the West and China, right? You cannot, if you are a Western company, do what you like in China if you've got a social media company, right? There are amazing restrictions on your ability to operate in China. And so when China, you know, when the Chinese government and when ByteDance goes mad about this restriction of competition in America, you know, there is a massive degree of hypocrisy here, right? Because if you and I set up a social media company, we will not be able to go and run it how we like in China. If we're allowed to run it at all, there will be massive censorship. The data will definitely be gathered by the Chinese government. And so, you know, we have, you could just say in the West, we've just been naive in allowing companies like this free access to our market.
Because of course, the interesting thing about TikTok being Chinese owned as well is it doesn't actually exist in China, does it? They've got their own version. They don't actually allow people to use TikTok in China. Do you remember though with, and I always get the pronunciation of this wrong, but Huawei, how do you say it again?
Huawei.
Huawei. Do you remember they were largely pushed out of the US market though over their security concerns as well?
Yeah, so they've been largely pushed out of the UK market as well. But, yeah. Because of surveillance concerns. You know, TikTok is part of a process of the West trying to protect its security interests from possible abuse by the Chinese authorities of infrastructure, Chinese infrastructure that is implanted in the West.
I personally, though, would love it if the competition was reduced on social media, because there's too many things to look at now, though, don't you think? What with Threads and Facebook and Instagram, I can lose a whole evening scrolling through these things. So in terms of, you know, life in general, wouldn't it be good if there was a bit less competition?
I mean, look, let's be, I don't know.
Do you ever do the death scroll at night where you're just constantly looking at videos?
Yeah, a bit. I mean, it's sort of mind numbing, isn't it? It is a drug. Let's be under no illusion. I mean, look, this is, you know, something we've talked about before and we'll talk about again. I mean, look, we should be under no illusion. The rise of social media at a time of widening inequalities and stagnating living standards has, you know, encouraged extremism and intolerance, you know, in society, in politics. It's a cancer, right? But let's be absolutely clear, you know, kicking out TikTok leaves many other of these, you know, rather pernicious drugs on the market, as, you know, to use that metaphor. Maybe the future of TikTok should be put into a broader debate about the tremendous social harms these services have done. And the epidemic of mental ill health, particularly among young people, is undoubtedly linked to the rise of social media. But that is just a big subject for another time. The more specific issue is, if we just see it in markets terms, banning TikTok would make, as I said, Google, Meta, way more powerful. But there isn't a level playing field with China. And, you know, my own view is we should use every means to put pressure on China to open up its markets to Western businesses.
Yeah. The other thing that I'm quite interested in, see what happens with TikTok, is the former head of global marketing is suing TikTok or ByteDance, saying she was fired because the executive said that she was, she lacked the docility and meekness they believed was required of female employees. So this is part of a lawsuit that's been filed in the federal court in Manhattan on behalf of this woman who's the head of global marketing. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of that as well, because that's another good story that we should be talking about at some point.
Totally right. And I will not, I'm glad you didn't, but I will not be encouraging anybody listening to this to look for me doing silly dances, you know, encouraged many years ago by the teenagers in our house.
Oh, God. You didn't, did you?
Obviously, I didn't.
Right, well, we're going to need a break after that bombshell.
Hola.
Hello, this call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow, ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow, now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech. Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Welcome back to The Rest Is Money with me, Robert Peston.
And me, Steph McGovern.
So now we're going to talk about Nationwide's purchase of Virgin Money. This is an extraordinary event in many ways, and I think should have attracted, you know, way more attention than it has been. Because what we've got is Britain's biggest building society, the Nationwide. And the point about building societies is they are in effect owned by their customers.
They call them members, don't they? But they're customers.
They are a membership organization. And for donkey's years, pretty much certainly throughout our professional careers, building societies were supposed to be this great declining industry. They were converting into banks, issuing shares on the stock exchange. But here we've got the biggest building society in the country buying Virgin Money, a listed business, for £2.9 billion. And just to remind you a bit of history about Virgin Money, it itself, it was created by Richard Branson donkeys years ago. It bought the rump of Northern Rock. And, you know, you and I have a few stories to tell about Northern Rock, which was the bank that went bust in September 2007 and was broadly in the UK sense. You know, that was the event that marked the beginning of the financial crisis in the UK. It bought the rump of Northern Rock. It then bought the Yorkshire and Clydesdale banks, and it was supposed to be one of these new competitor challenger banks that was going to introduce all this new competition into the banking industry. And now, I mean, go full circle, it's being bought up by a building society.
And also what's interesting about this is, you know, the fact that this is a building society, so every borrower or saver gets a say on how it operates. In this instance...
Or do they, is the
point. Well, they're not getting a say, because that's the interesting thing about this. Not, you know, I actually am a customer of Nationwide and a customer of Virgin Money. And I've been getting these updates. You know, every year you get the email about the annual general meeting, whether you want to be part of it. So you do feel like you genuinely could have a say if you want. In this instance, though, there's some kind of archaic rule which says they don't need to ask their members about whether this deal goes through or not.
I think that is shocking in a way. I saw that. I mean, so just to be absolutely clear, Virgin Money shareholders get a say, right? Mm. But, you know, the membership organisation, and the whole point about Nationwide is it is supposed to be controlled by its members, and it even has a category. I think there are 2 or 3 million of these of so-called committed members. So these are members that are really supposed to be engaged. They don't get a vote. They don't get a say.
Also, I think, you know, with Nationwide, we mentioned there about the credit crunch and the financial crisis when we worked on that together. Nationwide got through all that because, you know, it's got this reputation of being in the interest of its members, not in the interest of excess profits. And, you know, it kind of survived all that.
All the profit gets in. The whole point about a mutual is if it works well, all the profit gets channeled back into better services and better prices for members. And the other thing about Nationwide, which was always really impressive at the time of the crisis, was it ran itself in a much more conservative, with a small c, prudent way than many of the big banks. And, you know, it was a sort of model of how I think a retail banking organisation should have been managed. Now, I'm not saying it's taking excessive risks by buying Virgin, but there is something, as you say, unsettling about the fact that it is doing this without consulting its own members.
Yeah. But the other thing that's interesting about Nationwide is they've been really committed to staying on the high street. So if you look at the bank branch numbers across all the banks, they've got the most. They've got 605 branches, which is the highest number of branches out of any other banking brand. And they've got this commitment that they're not going to leave any town or village, they say, before 2026. So, you know, that's obviously great for customers, but you wonder if that's good for business. You know, if they, when they buy Virgin Money, that's going to mean another 130 branches that they take on as well. So this is a heavily weighted towards, you know, physical branches, which is very different to the other banks as well. But I was looking at, you know, reading Debbie Crosby as the chief executive there, who funnily enough used to work for the Virgin Money CEO. But I was reading her kind of reasons for why they're on the high street. And she was saying that like half of their fixed rate ISAs are still set up in branch. It's people physically going in. And 25% of their savings account are also set up by people walking into the branch. So they feel like that is where they are winning on the high street. But it's an interesting compared to what everyone else is doing in banking, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think in the context of Nationwide, in my view, managing itself well, it is just worth remembering that, you know, Northern Rock, building society that becomes a bank, takes really crazy risks, has to be bailed out by the Bank of England, ultimately broken up. You know, bits of it end up in Virgin Money. Bradford and Bingley, there was another one that goes bust in 2008, was a, you know, a well-respected building society, but as a bank gets into terrible trouble. I think one of the things that's really interesting to me now is in this new ecosystem for finance, what's really interesting to me is the diversity we've got. So we've got these new players, the sort of Revolutes, the Monzos, the Starlings, most of them almost completely online. There are some services in that area which are really narrow. Many, some of the, you know, you've got these services that are more about foreign exchange than about rounded banking, but you can get a, you know, decent rounded online banking service. We've got Apple going into finance in a really big way. So you are getting competition in that sense. It is interesting to me, though, that what the government really wanted to do in 2008 was also create all these challenges in so-called bricks and mortar banking. And that hasn't really worked. I mean, you know, yes, Nationwide really believes in high street banking and is making a commitment to keep branches open for at least for a period. But at the same time, and we talked about this, but it's also interesting that, you know, Metro Bank, which was another one of these that was supposed to be the great challenger, got into really serious trouble.
Yes. Can I use this as a chance to tell one of my, also, I mean, I said about the Alistair Darling Penn story was my favourite story about working with you, but I do have another close contender, and that's the Richard Branson story. And so when this was all, I just want to set the scene for everyone listening. So the height of the financial crisis, Robert is constantly on the phone, not dissimilar to now. So while we were covering the crisis, when Robert was getting, you know, all the exclusives about what was happening at Northern Rock and everything else, I was working on a piece with Robert for the 10 o'clock news or whatever it was. And we get a call from Richard Branson, who wants to know what we know about the Virgin Money deal, because he thought we would know, well, Robert would know more than him. So he genuinely called us to find out whether you knew whether the deal was going to go through or not, because he thought you would know more than him. I was just totally surreal.
I do remember it really quite well. And I mean, you do have these weird experiences in life, which is, you know, you're reporting on a story. And this does happen quite a lot. I'm sure it's happened to you. You're reporting on a story, but because you've got access to lots of information from, you know, key players, some of the players then try and ring you up and try and persuade you to tell them stuff that you don't really want to tell them, because, you know, you're a journalist. You're not there to help them. So, yeah, this was not a unique thing. But you're right, to get a call from Branson in those circumstances was interesting.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I loved it. Yeah, what a time.
Do you think that if we just look at the fabric of banking at the moment, you know, we're getting the services that we need? It feels to me that we're really in a state of tremendous flux in terms of the banking industry. Services are still, I think, too expensive. We still don't quite know what impact, for example, an Apple is ultimately going to have. I suppose the question I'm interested in is this. We're supposed to be in a world of real competition, but actually, weirdly, people don't. I mean, people might set up a new, you know, Monzo or Revolut account, but they are still reluctant to move banks, aren't they?
Yeah, and that it comes back to that thing, doesn't it, if everyone thinks it's going to be a massive bollock to change banks, don't they? Because they think about all the individual direct debits they might have and everything else. And actually, people forget about the current account switch service, which basically does all that for you. And I get why, because, you know, people lack trust when it comes to banking, don't they? I think we've still got, you know, from everything that happened during the financial crisis, there is still probably an underlying lack of trust in what banks are telling you and what they're actually doing.
I think that is right. And it is amazing how that seismic event still infects everything.
Yeah. And also made our careers. It was a tough time for everyone going through it, but great for me.
No comment.
Right. That brings us to the end of this episode. We've got an interview for you for our next episode, which we're very excited about. A friend of yours, Robert, but someone who basically is possibly the brainiest person I've ever met in terms of economics and just understanding what will help the UK economy grow. She's someone who has got a contacts book bigger than Robert's, so that's a shock in itself. She works with governments around the world, advising them on growth and productivity and lots of other things. She's written loads of books. Her name is Mariana Mazzucato. And yeah, we're going to be chatting to her in the next episode.
We are. And even though Mariana is a friend, no favours. So that's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. We sound like the two Ronnies. Goodbye.
Goodbye.